This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast. I am your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with co-host Guy, episode 140.
Five.
Nice.
All right.
I'm good, mate. Yeah.
You on holiday?
I am literally right now. I'm on a cruise ship right now.
I wonder what you're doing right this minute.
Drinking.
Yeah.
Drinking, eating,
drinking,
partying. Not checking. I'm going to literally not have my phone one bit.
Nonsense.
Also,
your nose is growing when you say that.
Before we continue, this fantastic, brilliant, best podcast in the world, possibly even golf.
Oh, possibly even golf. No, definitely golf. top three in golf.
It's powered by our really good friends at Golf Bidder. If you don't know who Golf Bidder is, make sure you check them out. There's a link in the podcast description and the YouTube description. It's a way you can buy secondhand golf clubs and also sell some of your old golf clubs and get some cash, hard cash back from. And also you can buy brand new golf clubs on there as well.
Nice. So you're on holiday.
I am.
I don't want to give it away. What, you're on a cruise. Well, that's all we'll say. I've never been on a cruise. I like the idea of a cruise. I've watched a lot of documentaries about cruises and they definitely look good. But I feel like on a cruise, I'm guessing it's a big one. You're going to start to recognise people. People might, you know, oh, there's that guy that always wears the red shoes, for example. You know,
yeah.
Just,
yeah, yeah.
What will your vibe be? So people, say if I'm on the cruise, I didn't know you, don't watch golf, YouTube, don't know who you are. Are you going to be the guy that's always a bit leery, always drinking Guinness? Oh, that's that guy who drinks Guinness at 8:30 in the morning. What is your vibe going to be?
Well, obviously, we're going in with the family, three kids and the wife, and we're going for 2 weeks, which I'm really excited about. Going in, well, like I said, I won't say where.
You're there now?
I am literally there now. I am on holiday right now. So obviously, we're filming this in advance. So things in the golfing world might explode,
yeah.
And I'm going to know nothing about it.
Because you won't be on your phone?
I'm actually taking a proper camera. Not my phone. I'm going to take a camera to take pictures because it's easy to take your phone. Oh, I need my phone for pictures. Do you know what I mean? And it's easy to take your phone. Oh, just in case I'll nip to the shops. I need to pay for anything. I don't have to pay for anything.
You do know that I know this is all nonsense that you've got on your phone.
Watch me.
I'd love you to do it. Watch I think it'd be really refreshing.
I am.
Okay, wow.
I'm going full reset mode. And then if we do need to take pictures, I've also got my wife's phone. But yeah, I think it's going to be kids in the kids club. Fingers crossed. Me and Claire, a little relaxing walk around the deck, like a bit of sunbathing, margarita. I don't even like margaritas. Cocktails at lunchtime, lots of food, lots and lots of food. I'm going to come back twice the size I am. I've been working out quite a bit recently and slimming down, but I'm going to come back twice the size I am.
Like Henry VIII.
I'm going to come back big. And then what's slightly frustrating is I know I've not been playing ridiculously good golf recently, but I do feel like my game's been trending, and I feel like if I carried on playing golf now, I would continue to get better. I'm worried about what my golf's gonna be like when I come back.
One or two ways, my friend. You'll either come back and be unbelievable, you drive and be on point, your short game will be good, or you'll come back horrendous. And for the fact of break 75, I don't mind either way.
No, it's good. So all the break 75s have been filmed. We've filmed loads of content in the bag of in the bank. Obviously, we've got loads of good videos coming out. So I'll be drinking, chilling out, trying to really keep ourselves to ourselves. We're not. What's interesting on holiday? It's easy to try and make friends in it, and I don't need any more.
I've got enough.
I've got you.
kind of a friend, really, in a way, sometimes.
I implore you to be my friend.
It's a good job.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Hopefully come back fully suntanned and ready to start September with a bang.
I know what guy you're going to be. You're going to be the guy that people walk past and go, oh, there's that guy again that's always begging his wife for a phone, so we can have 5 minutes of scrolling. Please, there's 5 minutes.
There's that guy that's never off his phone. No, I think I'm excited about it. And
you know what you need?
Nice refresh.
You know, like in America, you see those hats where they're like cans of beer on the side. You need a hat that's got your phone just sitting at the front. You don't even have to use your hands. You just scroll with your nose.
No. I am going offline.
Nice.
Properly offline.
Well, as people will see from the title of this podcast, we've had a guest on, a phenomenal guest. And we're going to do a Dear Rick in a minute for the Golf Bidder Prize. Well, it's not going to announce today. Speaking of phones, Rick's is on, standard.
I'm somehow texting myself from the future.
But today's podcast is Robin Heisman, and it was unbelievable. Just a quick note, but you're going to explain a bit more who he is and what he's done, etc. So I want to say a quick note. This podcast is about golf course design. So if you're listening to the podcast, no worries. You can have a great, hopefully a great hour or so of podcast. It should be entertaining. It's very insightful. Not full of banter, but full of like really cool stories. I think it would be a really good one. However, small piece of advice, I would recommend if you're listening to maybe watch it again on YouTube, because we're going to add in a lot of, so if you're watching this, hello, you'll see, but we're going to add in a lot of footage of JCB and some visuals as well. So it doesn't mean it won't work if you're just listening, but I think watching will give it an elevated experience.
So Robin Heisman is a course architect and course designer. He has designed over 10 golf courses already, and he's worked in the golf industry for many years, and he works for European Golf Design, which is one of the biggest kind of golf course design companies, mm-hmm. Part owned by European Tour, build a lot of Ryder Cup golf courses, championship golf courses, and Robin pretty much single-handedly designed one of my favorite golf courses in the world, and I know yours as well, JCB. I know we've been there a lot recently. He designed that golf course.
It's insane.
Like, he designed the 17th, the famous par 3 over water, and he goes into how that accidentally happened.
Interesting story.
It really wasn't meant to happen. He also talks about kind of what he loves of seeing in a different golf course, what top five golf courses I should play that I've not played.
Yeah, listen to that.
Just so fascinating. However, I also want to tell a story about something that you mentioned off the podcast. It was after the podcast.
We didn't cover this. We should have done, but don't worry, we'll tell a story right now.
So right at the end, he kind of said, podcast had finished and this, that, and the other. He said, I had some props in my bag to show you. I completely forgot. I said, oh, what is it? And he pulled out some paperwork, and I was thinking, what's this going to be? And out of this paperwork, he pulled out, first off, the map of JCB. Yeah. Like, the way he'd drawn it and written it, and it was just fantastic. We got some imagery of that. We'll throw it in now. But also, he said, I thought you might ask me how I got into golf course design. And I was like, oh, God, why didn't we? That we normally do with a lot of guests. We say, how did you get into golf? How did you get into media? Whatever it may
be. And I'll be honest, I probably thought that it would, even though it's quite a very unique job, it would be quite straightforward that you got into architecture of some description, liked golf, and kind of wanted to breed the two together. But this story is much more interesting.
So he basically, he's always loved course designing. We spoke to his brother a few weeks ago up at the Open at St. Mm-hmm. Andrews, because his brother Andy Heisman works for Zen Putting Greens. And he said, even when he was a kid, he was just drawing golf holes and drawing different designs. And you think, that's crazy, that, isn't it? Like, I never did that. No. I've never done that once. And he basically, at the age, he was pretty young. Was he 19 at the time? It was in 1986.
Correct.
I believe he was 19. He sent a letter to one of the most famous golfers in the world at that point. In fact, the most famous golfer in the world at that point. Jack Nicklaus. Mm. And he sent a letter to Jack Nicklaus, North Palm Beach or whatever, Florida. And that was it. That was it. He doesn't have Jack Nicklaus's address, as obviously most people don't. He just posted Jack Nicklaus, North Palm Beach, whatever it may be, Florida, and off it went.
In reality, that should just get to the post office and then just go, oh yeah, we can't send that.
There's no address.
Yeah.
Somehow, it got to Jack Nicklaus, and Jack Nicklaus obviously read it, and he responded with a personalized letter back to Robin, signed in person by Jack Nicklaus.
Which we're going to put, again, if you're watching, you'll see it now. If you're listening, we're showing the letter as we speak.
Now, the letter that Robin sent to Jack was basically, Jack at this point was still in the prime of his career. Mm-hmm. The same year, 1986, he won the Masters. Yeah. So it's not like he was like retired at this point. But Jack Nicklaus, towards the back end of his career, really started to get into golf course design, and he's really put his name to a lot of phenomenal golf courses, including Muirfield Village, which we come onto in this podcast as well, because he likes tricking it up and makes it interesting. Jack Nicklaus came back with basically a list of things that Robin needed to do, like go to agricultural college, learn about course design, learn about golf course architecture. And Robin, to the letter, read it and thought, right, I'm going to do what the best golfer in the world ever has told me to do.
Yeah.
And Robin did exactly that, and he now lives his dream as a golf course architect.
And the weird thing is, that story in itself should be the end of it. That should be the most amazing story I've ever heard. It gets a little bit better.
2012, Robin decides again to send a letter to Jack Nicklaus. And I believe I'm guessing he had his address.
I think it was much easier to find on the internet an address that was registered to his company or whatever.
So Robin sent another letter, 2012. Now, at this point, Robin's obviously a grown man. This is 26 years later.
Yeah.
So, he's a grown man. He's in his 40s. He's obviously now, becoming more established in the golf course architect industry. And he wrote a letter again to Jack Nicklaus saying that he basically followed his advice and he now lives his dream of being a course architect. And he just wanted to send a nice letter, never thinking much of it. A few weeks later, Robin got another personalized, hand-signed letter from Jack Nicklaus.
And what is absolutely insane about this, not only does he get a reply again, they're almost exactly the same. The letter heading, the signature at the bottom, like the fact they're 26 years apart, you would think they were 6 months apart, and he's kept them both in such amazing condition.
I think I'd have had them framed.
Yes, personally. Me too.
I don't think I would have been carrying them around in a briefcase.
No.
But he showed them, and like I say, it was a shame we couldn't tell that story in the podcast, but I feel like we've done that justice.
We've done it justice. I mean, what an amazing guy, a lovely guy, very intelligent, great way about him. So I'm really excited for people to listen to this podcast and watch it.
We also talk about in this podcast about me designing my dream golf course.
Yeah, so every hole is, well, I'm sure you can work out what every hole for Rick's golf course would be like, but we come on to that in the there's no bunk. Well, actually, there could be bunkers.
I love bunkers.
So basically, I think a green just surrounded by bunker 100%. Would be perfect for you.
If you hit the green, great, you're putting massive greens.
Yes.
Massive.
You can put greens. Them anywhere.
If you miss the green, you're either on a perfect flat, almost green.
Yes, so it's just a green.
We're going to call it a semi-green or a bunker.
Yes. Basically the old course, really.
Pretty much. Yeah. And everything, if you miss the bunker to the right and you've got to chip over the bunker, no, everything filters from the side of the bunker. So even if you missed 50 yards right, it's going to hit a bank and trickle down into the bunker.
Yes, and there's also a local rule, we get a free drop. If you miss the green, you can drop it on the green for free. That's another one as well.
So, but genuinely, I reckon it even sparked my interest more after speaking to Robin. I would actually love to get into course design.
Yeah.
Later in my career, whatever that looks like, whether it's, I know we've joked about Rick's quick six, but I do believe that I've got a good eye for being able to, whether it's driving ranges or golf facilities or golf courses, I'd love to be able to kind of get involved in that as somewhat of a side project. That,
a little side hustle.
But imagine, I do think it's quite fascinating, and Robin was very humble about it. Imagine watching people play the golf course you've designed. He says in the podcast again, it's almost like acting like God.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
That's what you do a lot as well.
I quite like acting like God.
I'm going to tell you a little secret.
Go for
it. One of my darkest, deepest secrets. You've wanted to have a golf course architect on for a while, as you've mentioned this many a times to us off podcast when thinking of ideas or whatever. And obviously we came up with the idea of having Robin on because obviously we're such huge fans of JCB, like you alluded to. I'm going to be honest with you, I wasn't super, super excited to have, not say Robin on, but have a golf course architect on, because up until recently, golf architecture has been something that I've never been that thought about. Just go to a golf course and play and hope to play well. As I've played more nice courses, thanks to yourself and some open venues and some great golf courses, I'm starting to appreciate courses more and nice courses and the way they're designed. So I was kind of opening up to the idea, honest to God now, it was one of the most enjoyable podcasts we've done. I really enjoyed it. I think not only the subject is more interesting than I thought it would be, but without blowing smoke, Robin was a very articulate and interesting guy, and I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it. So I think you guys listening will.
I feel like we've wet everyone's palate enough.
Quick, okay then.
Let's do a quick Dear Rick and then get into the pod with
So
Robin.
Dear Rick, as you guys know by now, is sponsored by arguably my best friend, one of your close friends, Golf
yeah,
Bidder.
Yeah, I reckon family.
Yeah, potentially. We call them fam. So I text Golfbidder privately and say, hey, fam.
To be honest, I actually get on with Golfbidder more than I do my own family. So yeah. Maybe they're better than family.
So Rick Cruise is just Rick and the team from Golfbidder going on a cruise. And they're going to hopefully find a simulator and just whack old clubs and be like, who can get the longest drive with a TaylorMade M1? But anyway, they are very kindly giving us a prize for Dear Rick, which will get announced next week. And by then, we'll have the amount in question. I hope it's a good amount now after bigging this amount up so much. But... It will be. And also, you get pride of winning as well. So pride's a big thing, isn't it? So this Dear Rick, it's a decent one, as always. If you want to get yours right out next week, this is the last chance. Email us podcast@rickshields.com. However, this is how it goes. Please keep anonymous or change my name if you read it out. Thanks, okay?
Oh, can we change his name?
Call him...
Boris.
Boris. Okay, so this is from Boris. Love the podcast. Really makes my week feel complete.
Okay. Nice, Boris.
I wanted your opinion on my status as a bandit.
Oh.
Okay. I am.
He does sound like a Boris. Boris the Bandit.
Boris the Bandit. Double B. I'm a 22 handicap. I can drive 300 yards. I can pitch to 5 foot and I can chip it to 3 foot.
This actually sounds like another Boris from our country.
Oh, yeah.
That seems to tell a few little white lies.
He over-exaggerates things. However, I might do this twice per round. Occasionally, I can play phenomenally, brackets for my handicap, and win Stableford or even medal competitions. The result is everyone knows me as the Bandit.
Boris the Bandit.
And I hear people say pretty nasty things about me coming third or higher in a Saturday comp because I'm robbing them of their winnings. When, in reality, I may shoot 17 over par twice a year. That happens to be on a Sunday comp. Convenient. I've made a few friends that try and use me for an easy win in a doubles comp as
brilliant.
Well.
Brilliant.
Then they quickly ignore me when they realise that I am actually a 22 handicap. So they're thinking, right, Boris the Bandit's a good guy to have on your team. They play with him. And he has a stinker and shoots 40 over par. They think, why did I pick Boris? But... it is in his locker to go and shoot a good score. So he's in a bit of, he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. He's asking for your thoughts, Rick. What should he do? Well, basically what he's saying is, in a nutshell, and this is, I think a lot of us have this issue. Your handicap is something that people signify you for, don't they? So there's not many amateur sports. I wouldn't say, maybe there's with like running and having this 5K time, but if you said your mate plays five a side on a twice a week, you wouldn't say, how many goals you score? It's like
it's almost like you'd ask, is he any good? And you go, oh no, yeah, he's decent.
But that's all you could say,
that's
isn't it, really?
That's all you can say.
The only thing you might say, oh, when he was 14, he had trials at Bolton. That's all you can really say. With running, yeah, maybe you could say, oh, I can run 5K in 20 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever.
It's measurable.
Yeah, most sports, I guess it's quite hard to really give a level. However, with golf, we have handicaps now.
You have a number that instantly tells you what level you are.
100%. And people, rightly so, have different definitions of what a good player is. And we've discussed this a load of times on the podcast and you've done polls online. Some people think that if you're off 18 or better, you're good, which is understandable because 18 is the average in the UK. Some people might think you're only good if you have 9 or scratch or whatever it might be. If you're a brand new golfer and you get paired with the guys of 24, you might think, oh, they're good. So it's very different to measure. But your handicap should be really you on a good day.
It's a snapshot of you on a good day.
Definitely. Exactly. But however, if you are off 22, you're kind of in a funny level, I think, because let's be honest, you're going to make bogey most holes and you're going to throw in the odd double. But equally, you can make pars. Yeah, of course you can. So if you had a round where you just had the best round ever and you started off with 4 pars in a row, if for the remaining holes you then play to your handicap on the rest of the holes, you're going to finish like 4, 5, 6, 7 under your handicap potentially.
Yeah.
Which would kind of people think, oh, he's a bandit coming in with 43 Stableford points or a net 65, whatever it might be. But equally, if you're off 22, you can go out and go double, 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 and next thing, you've shot 36 over par.
I've had a... experienced this recently, and you've seen it in real life as well. When I played in the Legends Pro-Am, mm-hmm. John Daly and Adam Brown, the competition winner.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
He's off 22.
Yes.
And we nicknamed him 22.
No, was he not 25?
25, sorry. He was off 25,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was.
And I remember, I'm just looking through the messages now he sent me. I remember when I picked him out the hat and he won the prize. And I said to him, brilliant, well done, congratulations. I said, by the way, just so we know, what is your current handicap? And he actually said, it's 20. He actually said, told me it's 26 at the time. 26. And I didn't reply to him, but I thought, oh no, 26. Like, he's going to really struggle. Round somewhere like JCB, have 26.
It's a hard golf course.
My impression of a 26 handicap is someone who, you know, will sometimes break 100.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantees.
No.
Like, and normally.
That's normally a nice, friendly Parkland course, not somewhere like JCB.
So, when Adam signed up, obviously he won the prize. I'm not going to say, no, you can't have it, your handicap's too high. And I thought, okay, I'm just slightly kind of concerned. It'll be interesting. And then when we found out it was Texas Scramble that day, I was like, oh, actually, that makes me feel a bit better because he can just kind of participate when he wants.
Yeah.
He did not just participate in that day. He was the main reason why that trophy up on that shelf there, we came second
100%.
Place. Because for him, and I can only use him as an example, I'm not saying this every golfer, but it sounds like Boris our bandit. Because he could be called Adam Brown the Bandit.
Yes, he could. Brownie.
Brown the Bandit.
Brownie.
For all the bees. Adam, on that day, hit some shots, in my opinion, that was as good as a 10 handicapper.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
Well, strike-wise, and then he holds some putts that literally a tall pro would be over the moon
didn't
with.
I didn't hold a putt from that location.
No.
John Daly didn't hold a putt from that location. Ollie Phelps didn't, but Adam could.
We're talking 35, 40 footers.
For eagles and all sorts, right?
Insane.
But then, what we also saw that day, and I'm sure you won't mind me saying this, out of the whole group, he hit also some of the worst shots.
Yeah. Like, your bad, unless you hit a terrible chip, which occasionally you do, your bad shot might be like a pulled iron left.
Yeah.
In terms of actual ball flight and strike, it's not that bad. It's just
kind of got up in the air. You know, it's not an out and out.
He hit a couple of shots that were like shanky, thinny ones across the floor, and you're like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
But again, that's why his handicap is 25.
Yeah, it's a snapshot of you on a good day. So my advice to Boris the Bandit is ideally to not avoid... I mean, really, if you're winning competitions and you're playing well, your handicap should be getting docked. Mm-hmm. And I think in the more newer handicap, that is happening that a lot more quicker, isn't it?
I think it's having bigger changes. So you might be off 25, have a good round, and the way that your last 10 or whatever scores work out, you could go on to 18, let's just say.
But also, in a few months out, you could go back up again. So the handicap system's there, and I think if you are genuinely playing by the handicap system and not trying to fudge it or be dodgy, you know, not trying to manipulate it, your handicap is a fair reflection of your ability of golf.
Yeah.
As a whole, yes, you're going to hit some good shots every now and again, as any golfer has the ability to do so, but you'll also hit some bad ones that balance it all out.
I think as well, as definitely from when I'm a member of a golf club, obviously, but I don't play comps really anymore. But there definitely is a culture, I feel a bit harsh sometimes on higher handicap players. When they do have a good round and they win a comp, a lot of the better players almost look down at them. And I think that's because if you're a 6 handicapper, you're obviously a good golfer. The chance of you shooting 1 under gross are very, very slim. Like, it may would happen once, but it's very slim.
Yeah, so to win by 7.
Yeah, to win by 7. To shoot 7 under your handicap, exactly. However, the chance of a guy off 25 having the day and shooting 18
over.
Exactly. That could happen. That's not that. It's not like although it's still 7 shots, it's much smaller percentage better than the hand. Do you get what I mean?
It's a lesser percentage of the amount of shots you've hit.
Exactly. So it is more common that higher handicappers will shoot amazing scores. It just happens, doesn't it?
I suppose, again, it'd be a bit like, and I'm only using this number, I think my maths are right here. If you were to shoot 100, okay, normally, and you shot 7 better, 93, you've shot 7%. And
I know what you're trying to get at, but it also works in the reverse as well.
That's the right way. Anyway.
It also works, the last thing on this, it also works in the reverse where a scratch handicapper can have a nightmare, but a nightmare of someone off scratch might be an 82, so it's 10 over the handicap. A nightmare for Gareth 25 could be a million.
20 shots over, 30 shots over.
So hopefully there's some level of clarity. We've not got an answer for that, but it's a good discussion point. And I'm very excited to see what next week's dear Rick is, because one of those four is going to win. So the ones we've got so far, Barry the Bandit. We've got the guy who wanted to know how he could keep his wife and his dad happy. And we've also got the guy who had a son who was dropped from 52 handicap to 11 and was thinking he wanted to get even better and better and better and better. I wonder what next week will be. Maybe really next week will be. I was on a cruise with a golf pro who wouldn't stop giving me advice. He had no phone to scroll. He had no phone to scroll on. So he was looking around thinking, that guy, do you play golf? Yeah, let me fix your swing. I've not got a club. I don't care.
He wouldn't stop giving me advice. And at the end of the holiday, I got an invoice. Yeah, without further ado, we've whet your appetite enough. Sit back, relax, and let's welcome to the podcast golf designer and golf architect, Robin Heisman. So, Rob, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
I'm delighted to be here, Rick. Thank you.
I am really excited about talking to you because I think, honestly, right now, I think you've got one of the most fascinating jobs in the world of golf.
It can be.
There was a little slight hesitant pause there.
Well, if you knew what I've been doing for the last couple of days, you might think differently.
I'm sure it's not all rosy. I'm sure it's very, very complicated, and I'd love to dive into it. But it's something that every one of us that play golf, every single one of us, regardless of the golf course that we play at, whether it's a private, really exclusive and you know, expensive, whether it's a public golf course or a municipal, at some point, somebody had to design that golf course. Mm. Somebody had to say, well, these are the 18 holes that are going to work, and we're going to go down here, and this is going to be a par 4 and a par 5 and everything else. And obviously there's limitations with the land, I guess, when you arrive at site, but the world's your oyster. Once you're there, surely, how do you even start to picture how these holes come together? I mean, you've designed one of my favorite golf courses, JCB, Golf and Country Club. I've seen the pictures when it was a field.
Yes.
Quite literally a field.
Well, that's what gets me. Like you said, there's pictures within the clubhouse of before the golf course was made, and you can't fathom how somebody, you, have the vision to turn that, what's essentially like a farm, into a world-class golf course. It's insane.
So how do you do it?
Well, that's a big question. I guess you start the way you kind of suggested. You just basically start laying out little lines on a plan. You don't try and do it all at once. The first thing you've got to do is basically try and work out the layout plan.
I'm actually going to go one step further back than this.
Go on.
When somebody wants to build a golf course, okay? Mm. So they've bought this land, or they own this land, and they go, I'm going to build this into a golf course. I'm guessing then their job is to try and find a golf architect, a golf course designer, okay? And I'm guessing there's quite a lot out there.
Yes.
Of certain different pedigrees and certain different, you know, styles. And, you know, some designers probably like to have a lot of bunkers. Some like to probably have different tight holes or dog legs. How does the golf course that's about to be built, first off, pick a designer? Like, how do they decide, I want that guy to design this golf course?
Well, let's use JCB as an illustration because it's quite a good story behind that. So the company I work for, European Golf Design, is 50% owned by the European Tour.
Okay.
And on the bottom of the Tour's webpage, there's a little link to European Golf Design. So there's a chap at JCB called Alan Thompson who was like their development manager. And he might be the only person in history to find that link. Okay. Because it's well hidden. And they decided at JCB they wanted to have basically a golf course they could hold their version of something like the John Deere Classic or the Firestone Invitational on their golf course. So he went to the European Tour website to see what he could find. So he found this link down the bottom of the page and he called up our office. Now the Tour's office is in Wentworth. Our design office is in Sunningdale, so just down the road. And this is where it gets a little bit weird about why and how I'm here sitting with you talking about it. Because we've got about 8 people working in our office. And ordinarily, there's maybe 6 of us, or you know, before COVID, in the office.
And you're all course architects and designers.
We got 4 course architects in our office, managing director, CAD support, computer-aided design, accountant, things like that.
Yeah.
So on this particular day, there was only me and Matt, who's our CAD engineer, in the office. So I would normally be quite a long way down the pecking order for a phone call coming in because it would go to the managing director or it'd go to my colleague Ross, who designed Worsley Park, you know, all about his work, or maybe Gary before it gets to me. So the phone rings, Matt picks it up, takes his guy's inquiry and he rings through to me and says, Rob, there's a guy from JCB on the phone who wants to talk about golf courses. Can you help him out? So my immediate thought was, oh, it's some sales rep.
They want to sell some diggers to us to build golf courses.
Or to some contractors. They want to kind of sell some products. So I pick up the phone and say, yeah, it's Robin Heisman here. Can I help you? And it's this guy, Alan Thompson, lovely Scottish fella. And he says, oh, hello, my name's Alan Thompson. We at JCB here are quite interested in designing a golf course on our land. We wonder if you could help us out. So my ears pricked up at this point.
You were like, okay, this was a good time to pick up a phone call.
This wasn't what I was expecting. So we got talking and he said to me, he says, what I've done is I've overlaid Augusta National on our piece of land to see if it fits. And I think it does. But I'm no expert. I'd really like to get your opinion on that. So, okay, well, that's a nice way to start this conversation.
Yeah, you're saying all the right words so far.
So I said, well, let me flip open Google Earth and we can have a little look. You show me where you are. Show me what the piece of land is and we'll have a chat. So we did that. And you know, you've been there. It's kind of almost like a plectrum-shaped piece of land surrounded by roads next to the factory. So I looked at that. We talked it through about 10 minutes. And I said, okay, Alan, here's what we'll do. I'll come up and see you and you can talk me through this. We'll walk the land and you can just sort of explain it and we'll take it from there. There's no charge. Let's just talk. Now, that's basically equivalent of me now putting a flag in that project at European Golf Design. It's my project.
Yeah. You've got RH written all over
it. All over it.
It's yours.
Because there was no one in the office, so I couldn't kind of refer it to
you.
Well,
you couldn't do. No. There's no way you could hand it over to someone else. It was yours then.
So I arranged to go up a few days later. And, I mean, I knew nothing about JCB as a company other than, you know, diggers and you get stuck behind them on country lanes and swear at them. That was about what I knew. So I drove up to Roaster and then, of course, you see the headquarters and you think, oh, my God, this is something a bit extra.
Huge, isn't it?
Yeah, this is more than
I
expected.
It's a town. Its own town, isn't it, really?
And that's only one of four or five in that region. You drive past on the A50, a couple more. So we went into the factory. He walked us through the building upstairs to his office. And, you know, it's that kind of long walk through hundreds of meters of desks. And then we eventually went out onto the site. So that's basically how I got involved working for JCP. I mean, at that point, I hadn't seen the site, but it was, right, well, I get the idea that this company is a serious
company. Yeah, they're not going to build a normal golf course. They're going to build something pretty special.
Well, they wanted something they could hold a professional tournament on. We work for the tour. We design Ryder Cup courses. We design lots of tour venues. So we kind of understand
what it needs.
Yes, but we got no say on what the site is here. And so, you know, the stakes were quite high in what they wanted. But at that point, we didn't know if the site they had available would suffice. So that's when the hard work started, going across the road.
So you're out on the fields, you're walking it.
Yeah.
And what are you already at that point starting to go, okay, are you looking at the space and the land? Are you looking for iconic features? Obviously, there's the wonderful lake there, which you built the phenomenal 17th hole on. Are you starting to look at, okay, maybe this could be the starting point, this could be the end, are you looking at the routing, or are you looking at where par fours would fit? What's the next stage?
Before you even think about where the clubhouse is going to go, you're kind of looking for the holes that the site is giving you. And that gave us a few kind of like clues in a crossword or Sudoku. It was like, all right, that's a hole there. So, for example, the very first hole I found was hole 11.
Yeah.
Down by the brook.
Oh, that's beautiful, isn't it?
Nice hole.
Yeah.
It that's very Augusta style, I think, that hole, with the stream just down the left-hand side. It's almost it's almost like the 13th, but the wrong way around. And it's also a little bit like the 12th, the par 3 at Augusta.
Well, it was immediately apparent to me when I saw that. You know, there's
so that
there's
stream
a
was already there, obviously, and it kind of just flowed, and you were like, okay, yeah, I can see something working there.
So, like, that's the building block. You got that hole. It's going to start here, and it's going to end there.
Yeah.
What can we get to join up with it? So the next one that kind of came up to shape was the first. Now, you know, the alignment of the first was what I first saw, but the way it looks now is very, very different to how we first saw it. We took about 150,000 tons of earth out of that first hole.
Down the left? Was the lake there? Was the water there?
The big lake wasn't there.
Oh, wow.
No. No,
so the one in front of the green was there?
The one in front of the green was there. That's called a winding hole. Back in the days of the canal, that's where they would turn the barges around.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, that closed back in the early 19th century. That was closed for 150 years. Then the railway line ran along where the first T is. That is the railway line. But the story behind that one is that, you know, you've got the old hall, Woodseed Hall there up
yeah,
on the
yeah,
hill.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And that was planned to be the clubhouse. Lord Bamford, you know, kind of envisaged that as being the clubhouse. And he said to me that, you know, if we're in the clubhouse, I'd like to be able to see the water in the canal. But it was impossible because of the hillside in the way. It was a big wide road going up to the arena. So that hole was designed not only from the Tees looking towards the green, but from the hall looking down the valley so that you could see water.
Oh,
so
wow.
that whole bay was created primarily to give the view from where the clubhouse was going to be. But of course, it fits in beautifully. We're giving you that amazing tee shot off of the railway.
I think just a quick note, if people are listening at home, we might put some of the footage of the holes over the video version of the podcast. If you're listening in the car, be sure to go and watch the YouTube version as well. You'll see a lot of the holes.
It's all a bit visual.
Yeah, it is very visual. So you're starting to plot these holes and you know where 11 is and you know where the first is, but you maybe don't know the order of the holes just yet.
Yeah.
Let's say then you've left site, you've got a rough idea and you've left the site. Yeah. Do you then work with your CAD engineer back at European Golf Designs to start planning this out a little bit more?
No, it's all done entirely by hand. In fact, all the drawings are done by hand.
You draw them?
I draw them, all of it, and then we get it computer drafted. We draft it in to produce the drawings for the documents, but all the holes were designed by hand.
So you have a massive desk, I'm guessing.
Nearly as big as this, yeah.
With a huge map on it.
Yes.
Like a Google Earth map or something, is it? Or is it even better than that?
Oh, it's a 1 to 2,000 or 1 to 1,000 scale, so it's quite big.
And is it Google Earth style?
It was to begin with. We just scaled off Google Earth from an aerial.
Yeah.
And I basically kind of played join the dots. You know, you put the 11th on, you put the first on.
And you're literally just drawing it on the map.
Just in pencil, yeah. For the first couple of months, there was nothing more technical than pencil lines on a piece of tracing paper. Just when I worked out where the holes were going to go.
But obviously, I know we're talking about JCB a lot because it's something that I've obviously known. But this is not your first project, is it? You've done many other golf courses.
No, I've been going at this now 31 years.
Wow.
Since it was my first job.
Yeah. And what was your first ever golf course pretty much on your own?
Well, I had my own company up in Scotland after I was made redundant at the age of 26, which is not a good age to be made redundant in golf architecture.
No.
it was a sink or swim situation then. So I went up to Aberdeen where a project I'd worked on previously for my first employer, they fell into dispute and they came back and asked me to carry on. Now, you know, I had to kind of make sure it was a kind of a clean break, but that was my first one on my own up there at Deeside Golf Club in Scotland.
Right.
And it's amazing the way in which things happen just by word of mouth. You know, I was marking out a bunker on their new 18th hole when the Greens Chairman of Deeside introduced me to the Greens Chairman of Royal Dornoch. And before you knew it, I was engaged by them to redesign their second course, the Struy, word of mouth.
Well, you think about it, that must have what happened in the past.
Yeah.
Old Tom Morris would have been word of mouth. Alistair McKenzie would have been word of mouth.
Yeah.
Like, to go round to all these different places. And you were quite a historic in the world of kind of golf architects. Have you looked back and studied these kind of icons of golf architect design?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You can't really fake it, you know, unless you know what all the reference points are from back in history.
And who have you got a favourite course designer from back in history?
Probably McKenzie, I would say. I like the fact that he was quite avant-garde. He was prepared to stir things up a little bit. He didn't play it safe.
I'm confused because I pulled up Alistair McKenzie's golf course designs that he's done. Okay.
Yes.
And in the amount of time that he had, considering travel wasn't as easy back then when he was designing them, He designed so many golf courses in a really small period, in a very short period of time.
Yeah. Well, it's often the case back then that they wouldn't spend as much time on a project as we do now. They might kind of visit, do a plan, and leave it in the hands of a trusted contractor to do it.
So they might turn up, do the site walk like you did.
Yeah.
At somewhere like a JCB and seeing this land. They might have would they have had a big map back then? Like, would they have still had a big map?
I'm guessing? they'd have quite good maps back then, kind of beautifully hand-drawn topo maps and things like that, yeah.
So then they would have drawn out where the holes are going to be and then actually just pass on that design for someone else to actually build.
Yes, I mean, if you take Royal Melbourne, for example, I mean, it's one of his most famous designs, but he only went there once.
Wow.
He didn't see it at all after it was built because he left it in the hands of his associate there in Australia when he was off by then in America.
So he would have had people working under him. Is that right? Am I saying that? Would this be true? Or people who are local to the sites?
Yes, he would more likely he would have sort of agents in the countries he worked in. I mean, he did this grand tour of Australia, left a bunch of designs, and then a guy called Claude Morecambe, he kind of interpreted Alistair's requests and built the courses on his behalf. I don't think he never saw it again.
That's unbelievable. So that's why he designed so many. Because he wasn't at every site for a year, 2 years plus. He couldn't have been. He was there for a quick visit, quick site view. Not quick, but I'm sure. Yeah. Quick in the grand scale of things. Drawn it all out and then passed it on to whoever else to build.
Yes.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
But I think later in his career, we went to America and settled in America. He did spend quite a lot more time on his projects over there. So, you know, Augusta, Cypress Point.
Yeah.
Paso Tiempo is a course in California, he even built a house on, so he spent a lot of time on that.
So interesting. So you've drawn out and you've got all the designs and you know exactly where your 18 holes are going to be.
Yeah.
Do you then have to, I'm guessing, present that to the golf venue for approval? And do you have to present it to anybody else for recommendations or is this doable? Because I could... If we had a map now in front of us, right, with a blank canvas, I actually think I could draw a golf course, right?
Mm.
But to say then whether it's any of it's feasible, whether any of it's actually doable, for example, the 17th green you built at JCB, you might have drawn that and gone, yeah, let's just make this a bit bigger and just make that an island. But it's got to be a point you go, actually, is it doable?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a point. And that 17th hole is a good example of exactly that. Do you mind if I tell you how that came about?
Of course, I'd love you to.
Because that land wasn't on the site they gave us. They gave us the fields on the other side. That lake wasn't part of the golf course development site.
No way.
No, it was not there. Because it was a fishing lake. It was a lake.
Like a leisure centre, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, back side. There was a kind of the leisure club. So I was up on site looking at the 18th hole. And the 18th hole played from the 17th tee to the 18th green. That was the hole I was looking to design. And you can still see it now. You could play that hole.
Yeah, you could. Next time you go there. Slight doglet, yeah.
Yeah, just give it a go. See what you think.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, recently when I went for the JCB Championship, I went with the family. We're in a golf buggy. And normally when I play 17, I obviously go down and go down the bridge and play the hole and come back. Mm. But because spectators couldn't go down the hill down to the 17th green, it was transporting you down past the 18th.
Yeah, you had to go across, didn't you?
And I drove down. Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, I could imagine this is a hole.
Well, that was it. It was going to be the 18th for quite a long time.
So where was the other hole going to be? Was there another hole that squeezed in?
Yeah, there was. I'll come to that in a minute.
Anyway, it's got 17.
So I stood on the 17th tee, as is now. And I looked across to my left, and just under the canopy of the trees, I could just see this little sliver of blue water, the lake down below. And I thought, you know, if you just go over there and just kind of trim some of the trees, we can give the golfers quite a nice view of the lake, just kind of landscaping.
Yeah.
So I wandered over there, kind of poked on my head under the trees. And bizarrely, on the other side of these trees was a gap in this forest, just a grass hillside, looking straight down at the island. And I didn't know the island was there until that point.
But the island was really small, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was very narrow. It was about 15 yards across and then about 80 yards wide. And about 2 seconds later, I thought, oh, you could probably just about hit that far from here. And that was kind of the seed of the idea. So, well, okay, well, God, imagine if we put a green out there. That's going to be iconic. For JCB.
I can just imagine that moment, couldn't you?
And what year was this, by the way?
2012.
Okay. It was 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
You could stand there and go, yeah. Yeah, that could be a hole.
So I actually took a picture on the, you know, when I told you about just seeing the water, I took a photograph of that moment. I thought, just remind, and that was the exact moment I first saw it. And then I went across the trees, took another picture. And it was like that kind of hallelujah moment. You think, oh my God, this is it. This is unlocking the potential of this entire golf course by doing this. But I had to persuade them to let us have the island. So I did a sketch and I did a little plan. And what it did was it gave us an extra hole over there, which means we didn't have to have one elsewhere on the back nine. So that gave us a space for the 13th hole, the great big par five.
Oh, wow.
Was that not going to be a par five then?
No, we would have had to have had two or three holes in that field. And of course now it's just an enormous piece of land with one hole in it, and we were really struggling to find a par five for that
an
second part of the,
one.
For the back nine. But I was happy with the front nine, but the back nine at JCB was not strong until I found the 17th hole, and that was it was right. Okay, there's the idea. How do we make that work, and how do we not embarrass ourselves by, you know, getting the dimensions wrong or the green size wrong and all that kind of stuff. And so, there's quite a bit of science went into that green because, you know.
How'd you make it? You made it five times bigger, if not more.
Well, it was
10 times bigger.
Yeah, but there's a bit of margin for error there. I went on the internet and I went looking for kind of rollout for a drive because it's going to be 250 plus yards. I thought, this is going to be tragic if you hit down there and nothing will stop on it. So I made the green 50% deeper than I knew it had to be for a ball to stop. That's why it's so big. And then we just had to figure out, okay, how are we actually going to build this thing? Because, you know, you couldn't get to the island. The only way you could get there was by a boat at that time.
It's such a clever hole because off the black tees, which we've played it off, it's very daunting. But actually, when you do look at the surface area, there is quite a lot of room.
So it's plenty of room,
it's good because you get that feeling of like if you hit the green, you're very happy, you're over the moon, you tell your friends you hit the green on 17 at JCB and it's becoming an iconic hole in its own right as it deserves to be. But actually, it is more generous than it looks, isn't it?
If you hit that island, you celebrate. Well,
that's what I mean. And also, there's lots of tee options as well, which I think is good. The ones that the seniors was off was a little bit further forward.
Yeah, it's like
it makes it much more palatable. Yeah, such a good hole.
It is. I mean, it's too big for me. I'm no good enough to hit it off the back tees like you guys do.
Well, I was there obviously a couple of weeks ago. I hit everything from 6-iron to 3-wood in a week because the wind was so different.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually a bit downwind, but you're so high up. If you get anything coming out of the right and you just don't feel it, and it can just send it anywhere.
Yeah, no, it's so clever. When that was finally put together, Did you have a moment stood on that tee and just gone, wow, I've done it. This is the best hole I've designed. And is it the best hole you've designed, or is the better ones?
It's certainly the most, I don't know.
You're probably not allowed to say best hole you designed, because then there's other golf courses. Why didn't you build it at our golf course?
Well, you know, actually, I think I prefer the ninth at JCB to that.
You like that one, don't you?
The ninth is... Well, I like up the ninth. So I feel, again, we'll put images on this if you're watching.
If you've been watching the recent matches with the guys from Good on my channel, it's the first hole we play.
Yes. And I think for me, lucky enough to play JCB twice now, and we've been obviously loads of times filming, it's actually a course that, although it's beat me up both times I've played it, it's my fault because I can't hit my driver. However, it's a course that I've got to love more the more I know it. And I think nine is a hole that when I first played it, I was like, yeah, it's a nice little par three. I was so excited for 17. But actually going back and playing it more and seeing it more now, I think nine isn't necessarily a better hole than 17. They're very different, but it's a very almost underrated hole. It's a lovely hole, isn't it? Really is a nice hole, that one.
Yeah, it was the last hole on plan because for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, I was sold on the idea of the ninth hole aiming at the old towers of the hall, and the hall was going to play there, fully designed, everything, staked out, everything. And just one day I thought, you know what, if you just slightly hook one off of that, you're just going to brain someone on the 10th tee. So I thought, okay, well, we got this other little kind of patch of grass across to the right. I'm going to move it there. It's going to create a load more space for grandstands and circulation and fans. Let's move it there. So it was the very last hole to be designed, and you know, it's probably the best decision I've made in my career to move that green there.
Wow, that's really cool, isn't it? So you actually moved the green, you didn't move the tee?
No, the tee stayed where they were, more or less.
But the green was going to go more left of the trees?
Yeah.
The 10th tee is now, basically?
No, if you stand on the 9th tee and kind of look straight at the old hall, it was in that little gap.
No way. So, again, you've designed it. Mm-hmm. You've had it approved.
Yes.
You've had it approved from the golf venue, I'm guessing JCB for this example. You had it approved by those guys.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you've got to then plant, like, start work. Like, how does that, and you don't have to, I know I'm conscious we're talking about JCB a lot today, but it's obviously somewhere mutually I know. Have I played in any of your other golf courses that you've designed?
Probably not, because we don't tend to work too much in the UK. I've designed a course in Bahrain, one in Morocco, Czech Republic.
Wow.
Got one in Bulgaria right now, one in Arctic Circle in Norway.
Oh, wow.
What?
So
we could just do a full series of Break 75s at your golf courses and probably not do it once.
Yeah.
So you've planned it all out. You've got everything approved. It's now time to start digging. Yeah. Do you get involved in that as much as you can do, or you would do, or is that a stage?
Much.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Wellies are on.
Oh, totally, yeah. Oh, I was years. I mean, we started building it in 2014 and we finished in 2018.
And are you there pretty much
every week? Every week we were building it. I was there for 2-3 days a week at least. Yeah, a lot.
Oh, my God.
And it was really wet.
What, just a wet period of time in those
well,
4 years?
Well, it was really wet, but the ground, it's the Potteries, it's clay.
It doesn't seem like a wet course now, though.
Well, there's been a lot of drainage. A lot of drainage.
Sub-air now they've got as well.
We put in all the kind of the sub-air pipe work. I mean, they've only got
one. Oh, did you?
Yeah, it's all in there. We just got to put in the electrics. And they've put in a lot of sand capping in the last 12 months. That we didn't have the budget for at the time. But it was a horrible sight. I mean, there's a guy, I don't know if you know him, Adam Lawrence. He writes a magazine called Golf Course Architecture, and he said that the JCB site was the wettest site he'd ever visited.
Wow. You wouldn't think that?
You wouldn't. It was, it mashed my knee. I mean, I ruined my left knee walking around there over the ruts.
And was there ever a point you walking around and going, this won't work here?
No, there was never a point. I thought that. I mean, there's always a way. We can drain anything. No, there wasn't a point. I thought it wasn't going to work.
That's amazing. So the shovel hits the ground and off you go. And is it like a team meeting every week? How? Because I think if I designed it, I know what I'd be like.
Dog legs left every hole.
Dog legs left every hole.
There's a few of them.
There is.
But I'd be too I'd be really, like, I wouldn't be able to let people do stuff. I'd be too controlling. Like, I'd be going, no, I had this bunker doing that. No, whoa. We had this tea. Like, how do you make sure everything gets done to the level that you expect it to do? Do you have a team that works under you? Do you have meetings? Do you have a greens team and a teas team? Like, how does that all work?
Well, in this instance, JCB built it themselves. They were the main contractor. So I was the architect for them, but they were building it, and they kind of, between us, we arranged to bring in the subcontractors, and we had specialist shapers who I recommended to them. And
the shapers, is that all they do? They shape golf courses?
Yeah, basically, they'll go around the world just shaping golf courses 100% of the time.
And I'm guessing it's all machinery to shape a golf course.
Yeah. Yeah, it is now, yes. Mostly bulldozers, excavators. Obviously, we had several excavators we could get around.
Yeah, a lot of JCBs.
but you're there and they're shaping it. So are you quite controlling in that situation? Or are you comfortable and confident enough to go, okay, I'm going to let these guys do what they do because they're the best in the business?
Well, I've done the drawings, and the drawings are quite detailed and prescriptive. So, I know exactly what it should look like. But that's, it kind of gets you so far, and then the final 10-15% is kind of, you're winging it a little bit. You just, because it might not quite look how you thought it would, and then you just kind of massage it and do it by eye. I would say that, generally speaking, they look a lot like the plans. But if we only built them to the plans, it wouldn't be as good as if you were out there just with your skilled people working.
Sometimes
out on the
it's actually better off to work off plan.
Totally.
Because it works in that environment. And the shapers and the actual experts know, okay, yeah, I understand that on the plan, but in reality right now, that's not going to work. We need to have this bank go this way. We need to make sure that green structure falls off or whatever it may be.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of, you know, doing it by eye, doing it by hand, just doing it by experience rather than slavishly following a plan. But that gets you a long way down, are the plans.
I find that absolutely incredible. You know, when you have these named players come to design a golf course, okay? So let's say Sir Nick Faldo, for example, okay? Because he has Faldo Designs, right?
Yeah.
You might not be able to say it, or you might... Do they have a real big say in the first stage of it and then hand it over to their team? Or is it more just a branding kind of exercise now? Like, do you see when, like, Faldo designs a golf course, Montgomery designs a golf course, even Tiger Woods has been designing golf courses. Mm. Are they working closely with someone like you, I guess, a course architect and designer, or are they rolling out the maps and drawing it by hand?
Well, I've done two courses with Monty, one in Morocco, one in Bahrain, and, you know, he was there with me, but, you know, his career is as a professional golfer. But it does vary. I mean, certain guys do get stuck in more than others. Some, you know, it's an endorsement contract, basically. Yeah. Monty did chip in quite a lot. I saw quite a bit of him.
And does he have, someone like him, let's say, for example, will he have, because again, guy joking there, all my holes I'd be dog leg left. So I could just do a golf course in a circle. Do guys who have a tendency to hit certain types of golf shots want to design a golf course that would actually suit them as a golfer?
Well, it's always been said, if you play a Nicklaus course, they're all kind of set up for a fade into the greens.
Yeah.
Now, I know he wouldn't do that slavishly, but, you know, you kind of can see that sort of pattern.
I suppose if you stand in a piece of land and you're looking at a shot shape that you're thinking, right, how could this hole be a hole? And you only see shot shapes that move left to right. It's probably easy for you to set up like a bit of a fadey hole, I guess. You know, if that's how you play golf as such. So that's quite interesting. It's different depending
on. It varies a lot on location, and also, you know, it's the time of their career in which they find themselves. I mean, Fowler's been much more involved in recent years since he stopped playing.
Yeah.
It was said that Jack Nicklaus could tell you everything about every hole he designed. You know, because he knew his stuff. And, you know, I tend to believe that.
Because is it Muirfield Village? I think our TV's just gone off, Matt.
Sorry, one second. Cool.
Is it Muirfield Village? Sorry, Matt. Just make a note on that time as well, please. Is it Muirfield Village where Nicholas has recently completely changed the whole golf course?
Oh, he does it every year. I don't know if you saw a couple of years ago when they held the memorial. While they were putting out on the back nine, they were digging up the greens.
They were. I did see that. Yeah, I did.
It's his kind of... He does to that what they do to Augusta every year. He tinkers.
I find sometimes you'll see pictures, aerial pictures, obviously probably fraudulent ones or illegal ones, of Augusta when it's not April.
Yeah.
And it often doesn't look like Augusta we expect it to look like. Mm. Like, there's been pictures leaked recently of an extended 13th tee.
They built
the road and they bought the golf course near it and they built the road, extended the road and everything else. Mm. That looks so different to how we see it in August every single year. Is that because they do so much subtle work, but it kind of it blends over time? How do they make these subtle changes at somewhere like Augusta, yet it looks like it's been there forever?
Well, they have an off-season there. The summers are so hot. That's when they do all the work. And they'll rip it up every summer, pretty much, before they come back in the autumn time. No, they get quite aggressive with Augusta National every year. It'll be dirt a lot of the time during the summer if they're regrassing or redoing the greens or what have you. On their side is the fact that it's warm, it's wet, they've got irrigation. They can grow things there really quickly. But, you know, large parts of that golf course are redone every year. As we all know, it's a lot different than it used to be.
Yeah, of course.
A lot longer. So this 13th tee has been quite a long time in the offing that they're going to bring that in.
Since Bubba knocked it over the corner that time, I can't remember what year it was, but they were like, that hole needs to be extended. And it finally has been extended.
Well, they want to kind of get it back to what it was, a real gambit par five. It become a little bit too straightforward for these guys.
Do you think there is an issue with course architects and modern course design? So, obviously, the Open has just been at the old course. Okay, the winning score was 19 under par.
Yeah.
However, it seems to get a lot of media talking, oh, it's not long enough, it's not tough enough anymore, these guys can just rip it apart. But it was only a couple of weeks later at the PGA Tour event, I can't remember even what golf course it at, the winning score was like 25 under par. Right. And this was like a modern course. Does somewhere like the old course, it can still stack up to tournament play, can't it?
Well, it can. I mean, we saw this year, I think more than any other, they really put those pins away in places no one had ever seen them put before. To protect the course against the distance. I mean, there are tees on the old course now that were out of bounds all the way coming in on the back nine. Those tees are all stuck them out on the Eden course or the driving range. And there's a limit of so far they can go with the old course. If the weather lays down flat, it's defenseless. So they've got those hole locations. When you get an Open at St Andrews, you just pray for a bit of wind because that's a real equaliser.
Yeah.
But, modern golf is all about power. I mean, just watching you with the good guys, I mean, they're hitting tee shots on those videos I wouldn't even have conceived of.
They were hitting it long, I must admit.
Yeah. And, I mean, I've had this discussion quite a lot in relation to JCB. I won't go on about it too much. But we have a battle as course architects with technology. There's only so much we can do when the ball is in the air. You know, they can fire it over bunkers all day long, but when the ball's on the ground, then we've got your attention. The technology is neutralized when the ball is on the ground. So, you know, I advocate green complexes being really technical, greens themselves being really technical, so it puts a lot of pressure on approach play and the angle into a green. That's to me, that's the defense we have as architects against the power game, is by making the targets tricky.
Yeah. Nice to put.
You can see that at JCB, there's lots of greens that are very undulating, and if you hit the green, hit the wrong part, you're going to have a potential three putt on your hands.
Yeah, and it got commented on quite a lot by players in the Legends event, you know, and it shook them up a bit. And I like that. I like to get under their skin. I like them to be annoyed. Quite frankly,
your job is to annoy golfers.
Yeah, I mean, the architect Pete Dye says, and he's one of his famous quotes was, "When you get those guys thinking they're in trouble."
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking. Yeah,
yeah, and that's been a bit of a mantra for me. And I take a bit of flack for it, and I did. Not long after I saw you, I took a bit of flak, but I'll leave it at that.
I know there was one golfer who I spoke to the night of, who you just mentioned, actually, who definitely was complexed about some of the greens. And Mr. Montgomery, did he bend your ear?
You might say that, I can't possibly comment.
He definitely said some of those greens are the wrong way round, and I was like, oh.
That's normally a sign when people have had a bad day, though, isn't it? Let's be honest. If you play well, it's the best course in sliced bread.
I was like, we just come second in the pro, I'm the fine, mate. Don't worry.
But we were saying that, we said in the last podcast that we did, well, the one before, about how as golfers we get annoyed how we can be so good one day and not the next. But what we thought was crazy was how on the first day James Kingston shot 62. I think the second day was 74, and that just shows that on one day he's kind of ripped the course up, but the next day he couldn't break par.
No, and I was talking to Graham McDonald, the chief executive at JCB, while he was doing it, and he was getting quite worried. He was saying, "Oh, we can't have a 25 under winning." And I did say to him, "Oh, don't worry, he'll wake up tomorrow and shoot 75.
He weren't far off,
and. No, that surprised everybody. I mean, we know that they were playing quite a long way forward for guys of their skill.
Yeah.
I mean, still nearly 7,000 yards, but, you know, all the scoring holes, they were playing well forward. But even so, 62.
It's crazy. It's crazy scores.
No one got anywhere close to that the rest of the week.
When you go and play golf,
yeah,
can you actually enjoy it? Or are you constantly looking at golf course design?
No, I can. I can switch off. I can play JCB now as a golfer. And kind of detach myself from, I did that. I can just enjoy it as a golf course.
Do you ever hit into a bunker and go, "Bloody hell, why did I put a bunker there?"
That happens a lot, as you can imagine. And I am terrible at bunkers. I mean, honestly, my courses shouldn't have any at all if I was designing for myself.
What's your style? Do you have an actual style of course? Like, obviously, Mackenzie had the double-tiered greens. I don't really know many others, to be honest. Nicholas, like say, has a bit more of a fade design. Do you have a style that you like to stick to?
Well, I think the greens are quite. The greens have a certain look to them.
So do you want in let's say, how many courses have you designed right now?
Oh God, I never think about that.
More than 10?
Yeah, more than 10. Yeah.
After 50 courses that you design in your career, let's say, what do you want when somebody walks on and goes, "Oh, is this a Heisman?" You go, "Oh yeah, this is a Heisman." How can you tell? It's because of
the 17th amazing par three.
I've had 42 putts. That's probably what they're going to say.
Do you think it is that? Do you think it is the complexity of the greens you want to be known for?
No.
And do you want to be known for anything, or do you want loads of different styles?
No, I don't want to be self-referential. I think you need to be... I'm very mindful of that. If I've done something before, I think, "Oh, hang on a minute. I don't want to do that again. I want to do something different." I like bunkers to be visible. I like them to be dramatic. So, you know, we put a lot of work into making the bunkers, you know, really set into the landscape. That's something really I put a lot of effort into, because you play a lot of modern courses and you just can't see anything.
Yeah, there's a few that you can just like, "Oh, I didn't even know there's a bunker there."
No, but you can do that intentionally. But I think it's very easy to correct that and make it stand out. So the ones we've done there in Staffordshire are particularly noticeable for that. They really do add to the scenery. But no, I'd like to think that if you played the ones I've done in, let's say, since I joined EGD, that you wouldn't necessarily tell that it was the same guy.
And is that what you want? Is that the...
That would be what I'd want. But I wouldn't, yeah.
There's some architects, there's some designers have a style and they stick to it.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few architects you could blindfold me, put me in a car and drop me in the middle of their golf course, and I'll tell you in 2 seconds who designed it.
Wow. And what are you looking for? Is it the bunkering? Is it the where the tee locations are? Whether you've got to hit them right or left, or left kind and right?
Earthwork style, I think it is. It's the style of the shaping. That's immediately identifiable for some people, yeah.
Is there a golf course, an old one, so let's say it's a Prestwick or a St. Andrews, that you would love to get your teeth into to redesign? Ooh. And do you do redesigns?
Yes,
we do. It's getting quite popular now, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you've got to consider that building new courses is really not the name of the game anymore. For 90% of us in this trade, it's renovation work, it's extension work. For every new course you build, there's a future potential renovation job or restoration job to be done. The only time now you'd often see new courses being built in the UK is if someone sold a course for housing and then got a relocation. So yeah, there's a lot of that. To answer your question, it's not actually that old. The second course at Ballybunion,
I don't know it, but
was designed by Robert Trent Jones in the 80s, and I love it to bits. And they've had a bit of a tinker with it, but even he himself said in his later years that was his biggest missed opportunity. He had an amazing piece of land, but he just didn't do it justice.
Oh, really? It's quite interesting.
I'd love to get hold of that. But I think they've probably done what they're going to do with it for now. Yeah, there's a few. I'm trying to think what I can know about that. But there's been a lot of work done on links courses around the country recently.
Yeah.
You'll see all the kind of the open venue courses have all had a bit of a brush up.
Yeah, definitely.
In recent times.
Well, one of the more famous ones, obviously, it's not on the open roster currently because of political reasons, but Turnberry.
Oh, it's an amazing course.
Like I've actually, believe this or not, and you might want to walk off the podcast when I say this, I've never been to Turnberry. I've never played it in its original condition. I've never played it in its new condition.
It's definitely a break 75 coming up there. Then
I believe it's spectacular.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It is brilliant. What they did there, I remember Peter Alice for donkey's years would look at that ninth hole at Turnberry, the old one, and say, oh, if only they put a par three across the bay here, it would be a world-class hole. And they eventually did. And it's really made that course so much better, what they've done with it in recent years. It was a bit disappointing before.
Your next project, okay?
Yes.
I want you to give me the dream plot of land. So the phone rings at EGD, and they go, hi, it's Rick Shields here, and I want to design a golf course, okay? And you go, where is it? What patch of land is it?
Yes.
What would you love me to say? Because I'll go and buy it.
You'll go and buy it.
We'll do one together. I would honestly, genuinely, hand on heart, I would love to design golf courses, get involved in that. I think it fascinates me.
It is, at times, the most rewarding profession you could possibly have.
Yeah.
Bar, winning golf tournaments, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you do have that kind of opportunity to kind of just, in a way, kind of play God in a way. You're kind of looking at a piece of land and thinking, I want it to look like this. And, by golly, I'm going to do that.
4-5 years later. So go on, I'm on the phone and I'll say, I've got a patch of land. What would you want it to have?
Sand. Lots and lots and lots of sand.
So you'd want it to be linksy or not?
You want it preferably linksy, but it could be heathland.
Okay, that's a good point.
Because with sand, you can just do amazing golf courses quite cheaply.
And is that because of what's those new things now called, like sand scrapes?
They're like bunkers, but they're not a bunker.
I've done a few of them in the past.
They've got really popular. We played the new hole at Royal Liverpool a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the new 17th hole.
Archerfield as well.
And Archerfield. Fidra. And it just looks so good when they've and it's like, it's sand, but it's not a bunker, but it can be a bunker, but it's just natural. It's lovely.
Yeah. And in the right place, they look amazing. They actually take a ton to look after because, grass wants to grow and it'll fill them in if you don't look after them. The piece of land that I really wanted has actually got a golf course on it now.
Oh, wow.
It's where they built St. Patrick's in Ireland.
Don't know it.
You don't know it. Rosapenna.
I look now.
Is that the one that Eric did a video on yesterday? Adventures in Golf. Eric Anders Lang.
I haven't seen it.
They did an Adventures in Golf that came out literally yesterday, and it was in Ireland, and it was unbelievable, and I'm
probably
99% sure.
What's it called again? St. Patrick's,
I'm
pretty sure it was that golf course, because I'd never heard of it before,
golf club,
and it looks unbelievable.
I mean, what a name for a golf course as well, St. Patrick's in Ireland.
Because they had two golf courses on that piece of land in the past that were done really,
Is that it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Oh, my God. We'll put a picture up.
I'm sure that's the one. Let's have a quick
look. Oh, it looks it.
I haven't got my glasses on, but it looks like it.
St. Patrick's links at Rosapenna.
Rosapenna, yeah.
Yeah.
He's put the last course and Lush links.
I literally watched that yesterday and couldn't believe how. I've never heard of that place.
Is it amazing?
Looked unbelievable.
So that's the patch of land. So by the ocean.
Yeah, because I went there, when they had these two old courses on it that they'd just done locally for next to no money. And I turned up there to play them, and they'd actually closed. They'd been abandoned. And they sold the land to a developer who'd gone bust. So these two golf course was just lying abandoned on this incredible piece of dune land. And it just sat there that way for about 10 years until the Rosapenna Hotel next door bought it out of administration and hired Tom Doak to put one golf course on this land that previously had two. And I played it last year, playing it again in September. And it's probably the last links course they'll build in Ireland.
That's what they've said.
Yeah, because you can't get permission to build on new links land anymore. But because it was already a golf course, it didn't need to.
Was it Tom Morris beforehand? Because I'm sure there's a Tom Morris like memorial thing there, isn't there?
Tom Morris did the original course at Rosapenna. And then Pat Ruddy did the Sandy Hills links, which is there. And then Tom Doak did this St. Patrick's links.
Why are they not letting them build on links course anymore? Links land?
Protected. It's all environmentally protected now.
All wildlife and things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Oh God,
that makes sense.
So it looks pretty good though. That's the spot.
Yeah. Well, it would have been.
Lots. Yeah.
There's some bits up in Scotland I think are still on military land that no one really knows too much about. There's a load down near Carnoustie, the Budden Links, firing ranges at the moment. Some amazing links land there. There's some amazing links land in the place called the Culbin Forest up near Nairn. It's all covered in trees, but, you know, mythically people are saying if they took the trees off, it would be some of the greatest lynx courses you've ever seen in your life. So there are a few places, just whether you can get permission for them. You know.
And is scenery a big thing for you on a golf course?
It is, but I think you can create scenery looking inwards if you don't have it looking outwards. Mm. Yeah, for sure, if you've got a mountain backdrop or an ocean backdrop, it does a lot of heavy lifting for you. Yeah,
that's one thing. When we played a lot of open courses recently, been very privileged to do so. And like Carnoustie is obviously a legend of a golf course. And it's just a shame that you can't see the sea at all. And then you go to like a King's Barnes or Wallasey, we played the other day. I was so impressed with Wallasey, how you can just see the ocean next year. It does really add something.
Yeah, it's like Ballybunion. You go to Ballybunion, you're just transfixed by the ocean on half of the holes there. No one designed that. It's just...
Yeah,
lend into the golf course free of charge.
Give me five courses, Robin, that I have to play.
You have to play geographically.
I'm going to go St. Patrick's on that list.
Worldwide? Or UK?
Let's go UK first. No,
let's go UK.
And then
Ireland.
We'll see how many you've done as well.
All right. Well, I'm going to send you to Carn in Ireland.
Okay.
I paid for a life membership there. And
have you?
I have. And that was quite an investment, but it is... It's the most majestic links course you've ever seen in your life. It is incredible.
Right. So
and it's in the middle of nowhere. And it takes a lot of effort to get there. So there's two Irish courses. We'll stop with them. Five courses you have to play. I suppose up in Scotland, if you've never been to Dornoch, you should play that.
I've played Dornoch.
You really ought to.
I feel like I've not played enough golf courses.
And you should play. Go there in June.
In June? Why is the rough up?
No, you can just play till midnight.
All right, okay. So Dornoch. Dornoch Golf Club, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a linksy list so far.
It's quite, I'm taken by that. Do you want an inland one?
Go for it. Mix it up a bit.
Inland one. Painswick.
I like how I've not heard of them, though.
Painswick.
And where's that?
That's in Gloucestershire.
Right.
It's less than 5,000 yards long.
Love it already.
You might break 75.
Ouch.
You might break 65, quite frankly. It is just the weirdest, quirkiest golf course on the planet, but it is just adorable.
Oh, my God. Okay, and then give us one more.
Give you one more. What do you fancy, inland or...
Something like a Heathlundy one, if that one wasn't already. What about like a... Because we played Alwoodley, and we loved it, but apparently... No, so we played Moortown, didn't we? Alwoodley's meant to be even better. I've heard Sunningdale are both unbelievable. Never played
either of
those.
That's why you said your office is in Sunningdale.
Sunningdale, yeah. Although I don't know it very well. I mean, have you played it?
No, I've not.
Oh, then there you go. You've got to play Sunningdale.
Is that it?
Sunningdale, yeah.
And then one worldwide.
I think I'm going to give you a toss-up between Pine Valley.
I've heard about it.
Yeah.
I've heard how good that
is. And Cypress Point.
Have you been to Pine Valley?
Yes, I've walked it, but I haven't played it.
Question then. I've hit a lot of people say Pine Valley's number one in the world. You hear people say County Down as well recently. I'm not sure. You obviously know much better than we do. I've watched some of the drone footage on, I think it's Golf Digest, done it off Pine Valley.
Yeah.
It looks great, but what is it about it that's so good?
I think it's almost the ultimate test of nerve because it's so penal. Mm. I mean, they have a local rule there.
Because you're only going to play it once ever in your life if you ever get a chance to play it.
What's the rule? What's the local
There's
rule?
There's no preferred lies. You can't lift and drop from anywhere on the golf course, even if you're under a root behind a tree. There's a story about a guy who set off the first four holes, come back to the clubhouse, and I think the first four holes, and then the fifth is par three, and I think he'd gone birdie, eagle, birdie, then he holed in one on the fifth, and he said, "Well, I'm going to nip into the clubhouse to get a drink before I carry on," and he never came out. It was like he never finished.
Completed golf.
It was, you know. You can't do any better than that on this course.
Oh my God.
But I've got a history book there, and then there's of Pine Valley, and there's a whole chapter about people who had these incredible disasters playing out there and, you know, shooting 25 on a hole because they couldn't get out of a stream, and the ball kept on rolling down the stream, and they have to
keep on. Can't even say what drops out of water.
No, there was no, well, you know, if you lost the ball in the lake, you've got to take a drop, but if you can see the ball, you've got to hit it.
I love that.
That's crazy.
I know it's very hard to say, but what do you think is the best golf course in the world?
Well, that's a tricky one. A lot of people would actually say Royal Melbourne's West Course is the best in the world. It's a sort of purest example of golf course architecture at its best. Mm. You know, best bunkering, the best greens, just the best layout. I have played that one and it is remarkably good. And there's a couple of holes at JCB are kind of modelled on holes from Royal Melbourne. Seventh hole particularly at JCB.
A par five up the hill.
No, the one down.
Yep.
Yeah, with a very strong dogleg. I think there's quite a good consensus that might be. If you went to the ranking lists, it's usually Pine Valley is number one. But you'd manage it quite nicely because the fairways are huge. It's not long. It's just one of those courses that it will shred your nerves if you've got a bit of a glitch in your swing.
Which course is it? Royal Melbourne, which one?
West.
The West, yeah. They use a composite course in the President's Cup.
Does look nice. Christ.
Yeah.
But can you give us the number one? What would you say? Did you give us a number one then or not?
I'm going to go Royal Melbourne. I think that's probably the best architecture, and I guess that's my kind of specialist subject.
Yeah.
There you go. Amazing. Well, Rob, you have been absolutely phenomenal today. Loved having you on. I feel like we need a part two at some point in the future. When I want to design my own golf course, okay?
Yeah.
We'll call it St. Rick's. We'll get rid of the pat. St. Rick's.
Buy him out.
And we'll put it on the best patch of land in the world, and we'll make some incredible
The
golf
only
course.
Thing is with Rick, you've got quite short patience with things. So Rick would want to design it, and then it'd be ready like maybe 2 weeks later.
2 weeks,
so if you've
all
got
right?
the best contractors with JCBs.
Well, we'll get some AstroTurf for this.
I quite like that.
Lay it down.
Just a batch of AstroTurf straight down. Robin, you've been amazing. Yeah, I can't wait to follow your journey, play more of your golf courses, play the top five list that you give us, and good luck with it all, and keep killing it. Keep designing these amazing golf courses.
Rick Guy, thank you very much. Loved it.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.